Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It is a Friday. What a week it's been. Close it out strong today, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio right here, FS1. 1 hour from now, Blazing Five off a losing week. Underdog week in the Blazing Five. Also in 30 minutes, Greg Cosell. We couldn't use Greg Cosell on Thursday, our NFL meat sandwich. He's going to be in 30 minutes today. Greg Cosell comes down. If you bet football, if you're fantasy football, or you just love the intricacies of football, he's our NFL meat sandwich. And Joy Taylor, Miami Heat tonight trying to stave off elimination. How are you?
I'm holding out hope. All I have right now is hope.
That's right.
Isn't it a crazy sports week, though?
Great.
Game last night was amazing.
Made steaks, couple of beers with a buddy, sat up and watched some great baseball playoffs in the NFL last night. So let's start with Tom Brady. Third down, fourth down, confusion. He's not telling the truth. Who cares? That's not why they lost. They lost because of 11 penalties and bad pass protection. The bottom line, you do anything long enough. You're married for 30 years, you're going to have more fights. You drive the same car for 20 years, you're going to have more flat tires. You do anything forever. And he's been playing quarterback forever. You're going to have a brain fart. Doesn't happen in Super Bowls. Doesn't happen in conference championships. Doesn't happen in big division rival games. It happened on a short week Thursday night. He forgot what down it was. This game wasn't about that play. This was about the Bears defense is built in that moment to stop. You can beat the Bears defense early, but in that moment, you're not beating the Bears defense. They only allow 57% completion percentage, the Bears defense, best in the NFL. They have a great pass rush. That's an ordinary Buccaneer offensive line, and they've allowed 4 touchdown passes in 5 games. No quarterbacks thrown for more than one. In that moment, by the time the game got to that, Tampa Bay wasn't winning. They were not going to take the ball 55 yards down the field in a minute, 5 seconds, and get a field goal. They weren't. They didn't have O.J. Howard, their best tight end talent. They didn't have Chris Godwin, their second best wide receiver talent. They didn't have Leonard Fournette out of the backfield swing pass. Tampa Bay could have won the game, and I thought they would by a field goal. But by the time it got to that, it didn't matter about the time. Short week on the road, Bears humiliated, and that defense is built for that moment. Here's the troubling thing if you're Tampa. Because most of us picked Tampa, myself included, to be a wild card team and go 9-7. All right, so you got to lose 7 games. This is their second. And if you look at the way their schedule works out, they look like a 6 or 7 loss team. So short week on the road, well-coached Bears. By the time that game got to the end, go 50 yards in a minute 5 against that defense, and they're getting a scary pass rush. That's not a place where Tampa Bay right now is built to win without their second best receiver, their best tight end, and their best running back. Here's what worries me again. The two things that I wondered about Tom this year, Joy is my witness. Number one, Tom's old. This offensive line ain't great. Left tackle opted out. Is this offensive line good enough to win a Super Bowl? Last night did not look good enough. Did not look good enough. The left tackle who opted out, they missed him. A lot. The second thing I talked about, remember I talked about culture. I kept saying, Bruce Arians, cocktails at 5, little loosey-goosey, the franchise has never buttoned up. Last night, they had 11 penalties. They had 11 penalties for over 100 yards. So the two things I worried about last night, it looked like old Tampa. It looked like Jameis Tampa without the pick 6. It was like a bunch of penalties, bad protection. Tom Brady's getting ticked off. Don't worry about the timeout, okay? If you do anything for a long time, drive a car, get married, be in a business, you're going to have bad weeks, bad days, and a brain fart. That just happens. As long as it doesn't happen in Super Bowls, conference championships, you know, the biggest games of the year, late in the season in December, I'm good with it. That stuff happens. But what can't happen, and that what reared its head last night, is 11 penalties. That defines Tampa Bay my entire life. 11 penalties. Bad pass protection with a bunch of stars. But this is a very forgivable loss. especially when it got down to the point where you're asking Tom, go 55 yards in a minute. That's not where they're at right now against that defense. Now, when Chris Godwin's back with Mike Evans and Leonard Fournette's back, the truth is you wouldn't be in that situation. You would have a 7-10 point lead. Tampa was better early. Chicago was better late. They got to clean up some of that stuff because it looked frighteningly, it resembled old Tampa. Penalties and bad pass protection. Here's Tom after.
We just had some negative plays, in the second half. We had a negative play, again, to get behind down distance. That's not where you want to be. So just we all have to do a better job. This isn't any one position. This isn't any one player. This is a team-wide thing that we all got to collectively, learn each other quickly and make improvements quickly. And, we all have to do a better job.
Yeah. Do a better job, Tampa. Tom forgot what down it was. Not the end of the world in a Thursday night game. 11 penalties? You're not winning games like that. You're not winning games with 11 penalties in this league. And by the way, bad pass protection, 11 penalties, never happened in New England. So it's probably really frustrating for Brady and something he's thought about and then realized last night. All right, let's keep it real. When Dak Prescott entered the NFL, it was not real. It was like Fantasy Island. He had the best offensive line, the best young running back. His head coach had been an NFL quarterback. Low expectations. 2-3 teams in the division are rebuilding. This morning we find out Tyron Smith, left tackle, is now out for the year. Oh, wait, their right tackle's out for the year. Oh, wait, their center, the Hall of Famer, retired. He's out forever. Dak Prescott finally is living the real. This is life, Joe Burrow, Sam Darnold. This is the way it works. Now he's got a bad offensive line. And he's got an outdated coach. And his defense stinks. It didn't stink his first couple years in the NFL. His first year, they were top five in points allowed. Now the defense stinks. The defensive coordinator stinks. The locker room's not good. No Hall of Fame Jason Witten there. They got a bunch of good receivers, but this is the real life in the NFL. Okay, Russell Wilson has been in this league for 9 years. He has yet to have a great offensive line. Aaron Rodgers has been in this league for 16 years, played 13. He's had one top five defense. Deshaun Watson is running for his life. 1 o'clock on Sunday. Put it down. And by the way, Carson Wentz is throwing to scout team guys for the third year in a row. That's the reality of the NFL. It is not Dak's first couple of years. No expectations, best offensive line, Zeke is the best running back, Jason Garrett is a non-screaming mentor who played in the league, and the defense was good, and the division was, really, 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 really not good. And no, that's not the way it works. The defense is awful, the offensive line now is a patchwork mess, the defense is awful, and now the question is, can Dak take an outdated head coach, a bad defensive coordinator, and win games? Yes, just not against really, really good teams. I mean, listen, I've never, ever resented kids who grow up with money. I've never resented it. Some people do, some people don't. I think most of us don't care, right? Most of us, we got our lives. But there are people that resent the trust fund kid. I don't. But as I've said many times on this show, I acknowledge I would have loved to have been a trust fund kid. I would have loved to not drive a 1966 Buick in high school, which broke down regularly. I would have loved to have a new BMW. I would have loved to have had money. I would have loved to have an easier life. I would have loved to intern at a station, then they hire me, maybe a network. I would have loved not having 14 years in the minors. But I don't resent it at all. I had a good time. But Dak was a little bit of a trust fund kid in the NFL. O-line, Zeke, the quarterback, the defense, the rebuilding, is a lot of good stuff. Now, it's not the worst situation in the world now, but what he's living is the Joe Burrow life and the Sam Darnold life and the injury life and the Carson Wentz life and the John Watson life. And I've said this about Patrick Mahomes. Bruh, you don't get Andy Reid. You don't get Travis Kelce, Mitchell Schwartz, Cheetah. You don't get the Hunt family. That's not the way it works. Your first team in the NFL, then you get Alex Smith. So this is, you know, Dak had a really safe and soft landing in the NFL, and now he's dealing with a bunch of junk and a bunch of stuff that everybody has to. And I think he's hardworking enough, durable enough, tough enough. He's just kind of guy that just gets through it all. He's talented enough. They're going to win some games this year. But beating good teams, no left tackles, backup center. I mean, that's what Russell can overcome. That's what Aaron can overcome. That's what Mahomes can overcome. But I don't think that's what Dak can overcome. You know, I never resented him. I don't, you know, nobody resents Magic for inheriting Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and a great coach and a great front office. But it was a little easier for Magic early than it was for Michael Jordan early or LeBron early. We can at least acknowledge that, right? Don't have to resent it, but we have to acknowledge it. And now Dak's living the real life of the NFL quarterbacks.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Oh, boy, Tom Brady. He did not shake hands with Nick Foles after the game. Oh, such bad sportsmanship. Really? That did Jimmy Kimmel, Stephen Colbert, and Jimmy Fallon after shows call, "Hey, congrats, bro. You crushed me in the ratings. Awesome job. You got better guests. We're going to have to cut staff." Stop. This isn't high school volleyball. It's not high school sports. It's not even college sports. It's the NFL. It's alpha males, tens of millions of dollars, careers at stake. Tom Brady just forgot what down it was. He was pissed. And LeBron didn't shake hands. He wasn't happy. 99% of the time, they both do it the right way. But fake humility, sportsmanship above all else. No, winning above all else. Kirk Cousins, 0-9 on Monday Night Football, but he's always gracious. I'll take the guy that's 11-3 on Monday Night Football and occasionally pissed. It's not good sportsmanship above everything else. It's winning in the NFL above everything else. What about the kids? They're your kids. Figure it out. They're not mine. I don't like yours. I like mine sometimes. It's not about, I don't care about your kids. Well, what if you can't watch a game with your kids and describe what happens and give it context, then maybe you should do more than make kids and have kids. Maybe you should learn to parent them. If you can't figure out, like, oh, what am I going to tell my son? Yeah, Tom should have taken a left there and shaken his hand. You want some ice cream? Really, your kid, it was so traumatic for your kids, they'll never get through school. Oh, my God. They've dealt with COVID in Zoom classes for 6 months. They're not going to be able to withstand Tom Brady and LeBron James not shaking hands. Enough with the false humility. Good sportsmanship above everything else. In soccer, they literally exchange flags before games. Think about that. In soccer, they give you a present before the game. The game is often called a friendly. That ain't the NFL. No, we tackle you, put your face in the dirt, tweak your knee, jam our thumb into your ear, and it's mostly legal. And when we lose, we're upset. And there's tens of millions and jobs on the line, no guaranteed contracts. That's the culture of the NFL. Sometimes guys don't want to shake hands. Yeah, I've been in this business for 40 years. When I steal a top advertiser from another show, do they call me? Congrats, bruh. You just took that big retailer from me. You know what we do when we do that? We high five. Yeah, awesome. And they sulk. And we do it regularly. And we want to because we're competitive. Because there's tens of millions of dollars at stake. This is the NFL. I don't care about what you're going to tell your kids. Be a parent. Your kids are handling this awful pandemic. They're doing just fine. Some of the parents aren't, but the kids are overwhelmingly doing just fine. Shaking hands, LeBron, Tom Brady. They have both been incredible ambassadors for their sports. Unbelievably gracious ambassadors for their sports. They have literally made executives of the NBA and NFL rich. They've made salespeople rich and executives rich and other players rich, and coaches are driving Mercedes because of Brady and LeBron. And this week they didn't shake hands. Brady forgot what down it was, and LeBron's had to live in a bubble for 3 months. Maybe they're not in the mood. I got their back.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Let's bring on. We don't bring it on. Usually we bring him on at Thursday. We weren't on the air yesterday. We said, let's bring Greg Cosell on first hour on Friday. It's our NFL meat sandwich. What a pleasure for me. 41 years NFL film was my friend, somebody I just love his stuff, and he is now joining us, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. So I've always been a fan of Carson Wentz. You know, last, this was classic Carson Wentz, sort of just taking what they give him. Where do you stand with Carson Wentz after a reasonably strong performance? Did you see some confidence gained from a couple of weeks earlier?
Well, Colin, I've always been a believer that you have to evaluate quarterbacks in a vacuum. You have to isolate the way they play separate from the team. And I think Wentz was better last week. I still think there are things he's not seeing clearly, and he's missing some throws because of it. And when I say missing throws, he's not turning it loose. He's just not getting a clear picture. But he was a more accurate last week. He made a couple of plays we think of as Carson Wentz plays. And certainly the long touchdown in the fourth quarter was a great throw. Yes, it is a team that lacks weapons, but I think then it becomes incumbent upon the coaching staff to schematically do things that help the quarterback in terms of defined reads. The Eagles tend to run a lot of what we call individual and isolation routes where they ask their receivers to win one-on-one. That's fine if you have great receivers. If you don't have great receivers, you need to help them with your concepts, stacks, bunches, motions, rubs. You need to do more of those kinds of things.
So they face the Steelers in a captivating game. Pittsburgh's defense, and this is Mike Tomlin's forte, it's very good up front. On film, is it the best you've seen? Like, what are its strengths? What does it look like on film?
I think it's the best defense in the NFL, to be honest with you. I think they're very good at all three levels. They're really good in their sub-nickel and sub-dime with their down four rushing the quarterback, and they have really good blitz packages. Their slot corner, Mike Hilton, is as good a blitzer from the slot as there is in the league. And on the back end, they are really good with disguise, with late movement. They cause a lot of problems for quarterbacks. To me, they're a really good defense, and this is a tough matchup for the Eagles.
Yeah, I think so too. Pittsburgh's healthier and rested. All right, so I can talk about Mike Nolan being a little outdated as a journeyman defensive coordinator. What worried me the most was the lack of effort on that reverse with OBJ. It looked like multiple players were like jogging down the field. Is it schemes? Is it personnel? DeMarcus Lawrence is still active, but he's not very productive. Jalen Smith is
right.
He's not filling lanes. What is it with them? Is it a personnel? Is it schematics? What does the tape say on the Cowboys defense?
You know, I always am fascinated by certain narratives that get thrown out there. Last week, their D-line got moved by double teams very easily. I didn't think Jalen Smith had a very good game. I didn't think he saw things particularly well and was a beat late to react. But I know a lot of people have been talking about, boy, they're doing a lot of things. You know, there's too much. You know, I find those things interesting. Bill Belichick's incredibly multiple when it comes to his defensive fronts, and he's a genius. Mike Nolan's incredibly multiple with his defensive fronts, and he seems to be an idiot. So, these kinds of narratives I find fascinating. Last week, they obviously did not play well. They were a little soft up front, getting moved far too easily.
Yeah. So Deshaun Watson's going to have a new coach. I defended Bill O'Brien. I said he won post-Jerry Sandusky at chaos at Penn State. He got Christian Hackenberg drafted. That was a feat. He goes to the NFL, and outside of the Deshaun Watson injury year, he had a winning record. He won a division with Brock Osweiler. And I'm like, I got. If I was a top college program, I'd hire him if I had an opening. And I think he deserves a second job. Is there anything, now that he is gone, how do you elevate Deshaun Watson? Their offensive line, they can't run the ball every time I watch them this year. What do you think they need to do to make it easier for Deshaun Watson going forward?
Well, I think Deshaun Watson's a fascinating evaluation. We know that he can be really good from the pocket within the structure of your offense. We know that he can be really good with his ability to make second reaction improvisational plays. We know that. But there's also an inconsistency to his game. There are times he doesn't see things clearly. There are times he holds the ball too much. There are times he leaves the pocket prematurely. In some ways, he's the kind of quarterback that you're not sure what you're going to get snap after snap. Now, I think he'll get there because he's a really smart kid, and I know he works very hard. But I think that there's just an inconsistency to his game. If people want to put that on Bill O'Brien, that's fine. But I think whether he plays this way his whole career, I guess we'll find out. but I think he's still a little bit of a work in progress.
Yeah. Aren't we all? Okay, so before I get to Belichick on Mahomes, which is, I think he's masterful, and he's had four first halves against Mahomes that have been very successful, I want to talk about Colts-Browns. So,
oh, yeah.
Very quietly, the Colts have built an enormously tough defense.
Yes, they have.
They really, and I feel like Browns-Colts, it's kind of the same thing. They want to run the ball, play good defense, yeah. Limit their quarterback. I just think the Colts are going to do a better job of it this weekend. What do you see in that Colts-Browns matchup?
Well, there are two teams that are very similar, and it's funny you say that. There's a number of teams now that have moved in that direction in terms of how they want to play. Minnesota's like that, clearly. So you're dealing with a Colts defense that is very front seven based. They don't blitz a lot. They rush the quarterback with four. They've got a very good linebacking unit. They're multiple with their front looks. They've got a great three technique defensive tackle in DeForest Buckner, a really good linebacker in Darius Leonard. They got some people that a lot of people might not know about. They've got a nose tackle named Grover Stewart, who's a very good player. They still have Justin Houston. So they've got very good players, and they rely on that front four an awful lot. And it's a really good linebacking core. So these are two teams that are essentially built the same way, Colin. Let's run the ball. Let's play good defense. If our quarterback throws it 25 times, we're perfectly happy with that.
Four games against Patrick Mahomes, and Belichick in the first half has given him issues in all four first halves. What's the secret sauce? What does the tape say?
Well, he does it differently. That's the thing about Belichick. It's not always the same. There have been times where he's doubled Hill, doubled Kelsey. There's been times he's put corners on Kelsey. Last week, he played a lot of softer coverage, played a much higher percentage of zone coverage. They tend to be a more man-based defense, played far more zone coverage. So it's a different sauce, as you call it, every time, because Belichick rarely does the same thing. Look, this is not rocket science as far as an approach. You want to limit the big plays. That's the thing. Because Mahomes is so special off structure and off schedule, you want to make sure you limit those plays. Now, he hit a few later. I remember the big play to Kelsey. They were in man coverage on that play. And Williams, who's a big corner slash safety, he's sort of their man matchup on really good tight ends for the Patriots. And Kelsey beat him. But for the most part, it was a really strong performance. And obviously, their offense couldn't get anything generated. So as the second half progressed, it was just a tough go.
Justin Herbert, Chargers, they named him the starter. My eyes tell me he looked a little bit, at the end of the year, that conservative Oregon coaching staff let it rip a little bit. And we were all like, Senior Bowl, Rose Bowl, you and I talk. We're like, that looks like an NFL starter early. What's the film say on him?
I think the film's been impressive. I think they're doing a really nice job with him. I mean, he's not at the point in his career where he's going to be a big-time progression reader, but he's tough in the pocket. He's physically imposing. What I like most, and this is important when I evaluate a quarterback, Colin, is he is willing to turn it loose.
Yep.
He's an aggressive thrower. And I think in the NFL, you have to be that way. Now, obviously, as you develop in your career, you want to make sure that you channel that a little bit, as Josh Allen has done to some extent.
Yeah.
But I think that Justin Herbert, it's in his DNA. He's going to throw the football. And I think you have to do that in the NFL.
Yeah, we tend to nitpick all these guys in college. Big, strong, smart, lets it rip, mobile, looks good to me. Finally, Joe Burrow is better than I thought. I said I thought my comp was Tony Romo. I think he's done a terrific job with marginal protection. It's our play of the week, but let's just talk about what you see so far with the Bengals' young quarterback.
And Burrow's different than Herbert because he's not a big arm guy.
Yeah.
Burrow is a timing rhythm player, and they play to his strengths. They've been in empty sets far more than any team in the NFL. And when you're in empty, the ball comes out quick. But he has a very refined feel for progression reading for a young quarterback. The ball comes out. There's a rhythmic feel. You know, Colin, you've watched quarterbacks for a long time. You can see when a quarterback plays rhythmically. And I think that Zach Taylor has done a really nice job sort of designing plays, and that's what we're going to look at. We're going to look at a really well-designed play right now so we can run it and we'll see it. So here's a play from last week where he hits T. Higgins, who, by the way, is playing very well, and I think he's going to be a really good player.
Yeah.
But here's an example. Here's what they wanted to get done. They wanted to get Higgins on this in-breaking route. We just saw the play. So Burrow is in the gun. So you want to get Higgins right there, right in the middle of the field on an in-breaking route. So who do you have to control on this play to do that? You have to control the two stacked linebackers, because otherwise they're going to be right in the middle of the passing lane.
All right.
So how do you control those two linebackers? This is where design football comes into play. The one that's closest to the bottom, to the top of the screen, you control with Drew Sample, the tight end. He's going to run a route through the formation. Now, what you do here is you control the one closest to Higgins with play action, and you get the linebacker to look into the backfield. As I said, the far linebacker, Drew Sample, controls him with his route. So what you're doing is you're expanding the two linebackers with what you do with the in the backfield and with your route that opens the passing lane. Notice the rhythm throw. So this is designed, setting up your quarterback to make it what's essentially an easy throw, but you're setting him up beautifully. The ball can come out. You get run after catch, and you get a 30-yard gain.
Yeah, it's amazing how often just a little tweak by a receiver, a back, that just moves a safety or a linebacker, just leans him right, and you can go left. It's just amazing how often. It's just a little subtle step by a tight end to the left, moves a linebacker two steps over, there's the crease in the window, and Burrow delivers.
No, he's been very – you know, when you see a player, particularly a quarterback, Colin, who looks like he did in college, you know he'll be a good player because he looks exactly the same as he did at LSU last year.
Good stuff, Greg Cosell, NFL Films. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Whenever you're playing these big games like Jimmy Garoppolo and Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl and Garoppolo loses and everybody just sells Jimmy Garoppolo. It's like you watch the game because like 100 million people watched it and Garoppolo outplayed Mahomes for three quarters. He misses a throw and he's no good. Have you seen San Francisco with Nick Mullins lately? They just lost to Philadelphia. And Lamar Jackson lost to Patrick Mahomes. Everybody's like, Lamar, I'm done. He's a ceiling. Okay. Lamar Jackson is completing 68% of his throws, 7 TDs, 1 pick, a passer rating of 111.5. I'm going to buy your stock. He plays Joe Burrow this weekend. Little context. Joe Burrow's older than Lamar Jackson. Lamar's 23 years old. When I was in college, like 22, I was pulling fire extinguishers out and spraying people. Like, he's 23. He's a kid. He's terrific. He got housed by Patrick Mahomes. Welcome to the NFL. That's going to happen to everybody for 15 years a lot. Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are going to dice up, you know, almost everybody not named Belichick and his quarterbacks. I'll buy your Lamar Jackson stock. I was like, let's just take a deep breath. Last week, he dropped 31 points against actually a really good Washington defense. Jared Goff's going to face him this weekend. Good luck with that. Washington defense is no fun. And the rookie's back. The Ohio State rush end is back.
Chase Young.
Chase Young's back this week. Watch what the Rams do offensively. Watch them struggle this week. Watch Jared Goff. They dropped the Ravens and Lamar dropped 31 points last week against Washington. Lamar didn't even have to finish the game against Washington. Whew, take a deep breath. Whew, Lamar's really, really good. You selling stock? I'm buying it. Okay. I do this tier one, tier two quarterback thing. Everybody always lists their quarterbacks. I don't want to do that. I just put quarterbacks in two tiers. I don't care about the other guys that aren't any good. Tier one is Russell Wilson, Mahomes, and Rodgers. They can do stuff you can't explain. They can carry bad lines, bad defenses. They're like superhuman. And then there's special guys, and that's kind of fluid. You can see I've moved around a lot of guys. Wentz, Derek Carr, Breeze, in, out, boom. Lamar's the head of the class there with Brady, Ben, Deshaun, and Josh Allen. I moved Josh Allen in. If you're one of these two, you can end up winning a Super Bowl. That's all I care about. If you're in a tier one, you can carry a bad unit to a Super Bowl. In tier two, you probably need a little more help. Deshaun's not winning a lot of playoff games with that offensive line. But this is a good tier to be in. I don't even care by tier three. By tier three, tier four, tier five, let's be honest. I'm looking for another quarterback. I'm drafting potentially another quarterback. I'll take every phone call from every GM in the league about a quarterback. I'm very close. If San Francisco loses again without Jimmy Garoppolo, I'm going to put him in tier two without playing. Because you can't keep telling me Kyle Shanahan's the smartest offensive coach in the world, and he is, and they can't win at home against beat-up Philadelphia without Jimmy Garoppolo. But we've done this now to Garoppolo and Lamar Jackson. They play a huge television game. We all watch it, and they have like a bad quarter, a bad miss, and we just bail on them. Folks, 85% of this league would die for Lamar Jackson, and 80 to 75% would die for Jimmy Garoppolo. Yeah, Seattle wouldn't, Green Bay wouldn't, maybe Pittsburgh this morning wouldn't, maybe Tampa this morning wouldn't, maybe they would in 2 years. Come on, Lamar's fine. He's doing great. Just look at the numbers. And he's also now, let's be honest now, he's a target. The wide receiving core is good, not special. It's going
to
be okay.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Albert Breer is now joining us, lead reporter, Monday morning quarterback. You know, it was interesting last night when I looked at the Buccaneers. The troubling part to me was not Tom Brady forgetting what down it was. It was they had 11 penalties. And they couldn't protect Brady. And that's been Tampa Bay's story for a decade. They're loosey-goosey. They're never buttoned up. And I felt like Tom was getting frustrated with something he never dealt with in New England, which was lack of discipline. That was my takeaway last night. Yours?
Yeah, and I think you saw that in the opener, too. I mean, it's been masked the last 3 weeks because they won those three games. But, you know, in the opener, you saw, you know, miscues on special teams. You saw the defense jumping off sides on a fourth and short, you know, so those existed in the Buccaneers' other loss as well. And, you know, I think that because the margin for error was so much smaller last night with Mike Evans hobbled, with Chris Godwin out, O.J. Howard obviously now out for the season, you know, they have to have a tighter operation right now because the personnel on hand isn't quite as good as it was the last few weeks. And, you know, I'm telling you, Colin, this is something I had my radar up for from the beginning. He's come from a place that is so buttoned up and does things in such a specific way. It was going to frustrate him when he goes somewhere else and he sees how the other 31 live. And so I think that that's part of the growth process here. And I think it's one of the reasons why when I was down there in camp, you know, I was there for a couple of days back in August. Why it really was Tom Brady's operation. I think he really felt a need over the summer to take over. And, you know, he hopes that by the end of the year, you'll be able to see the results in a team playing a little bit more disciplined than they did last night.
I think the Patriots would have beaten the Chiefs if Cam Newton started. That's how strongly I felt about New England's game plan. And you know what it made me feel like? It made me feel like New England's going to be too good to get one of these top quarterbacks. They're going to win too many games this year.
Yep.
And they're not going to do as Stidham and Hoyer, I can tell you that. You know what it made me think? Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension for a year or two with New England. I really felt that after watching that game. Am I nuts?
No. And I think that they look at him as somebody who could be a future answer for them. If I'm them, I go and try to take care of him now because I think I can get a discount. And I don't want to be put in a position where I've got a franchise tag him. But, you know, either way, I think you look at it and say they sign him for 3 or 4 years, Colin, right? You have your answer for right now if you do that. You're avoiding, you know, kind of being one of these teams out in the wilderness looking for one. You don't have to make a massive move up to get a Trey Lance or a Justin Fields. And then you bought yourself some time, you know, and Cam Newton in a way could be what Alex Smith was for Kansas City. And people forget how valuable he was to that whole operation. He allowed them to win. And the time being, while they found a guy that they could really build around like Patrick Mahomes. And so, I mean, best case scenario, maybe Cam Newton's your answer for the next 7 or 8 years. But at the very least, I think he's shown that he can give you a viable answer at that position for the next 3 or 4 years while you try to sort out who your quarterback of the future is.
Yeah, no, I absolutely believe that. I look around this landscape. They're just too darn good to get a top five or eight pick. They're not getting one of these guys. And I tell you, you saw Cam's value when he didn't play this Monday night because that game plan was outstanding. Finally, Bill O'Brien. He's out. I think he's going to get another job. Be that as it may, you have a franchise quarterback and a franchise left tackle. I threw this out. If you want to get picks and save cap space, trade J.J. Watt. There's about four teams in this league, Albert, that could use J.J. Watt for 2 years. Seattle, if they could afford him. The Ravens, if they could afford him. Do you think that's viable to get picks and cap space, which you desperately need? It may be time to move off J.J. Watt.
Are you talking about right now?
Yeah.
Because I think right now it might be a little difficult. The McNair family is so close to J.J. Watt, and he's been so important in the community. I'm not saying they couldn't be talked into it, but I sort of have my doubts over whether or not that would be viable right now, given the fact that they don't have somebody in place who's going to be the general manager going forward. If you're Cal McNair, do you trust Jack Easterby to find fair value after he was part of the deals for DeAndre Hopkins and Laremy Tunsil? I mean, I think that's a fair question to ask. So I'm with you. I think that he could be a piece that they could move and get some value back for and replenish some of the draft capital they lost over the last few years. I just think that, you know, in all likelihood, the smart play here, at least as far as Cal McNair would see it, is to wait until you have a new head coach and GM in place to help you make that decision.
By the way, a minute left. Who do you think's the leader in the clubhouse to get that gig?
I mean, I know Josh McDaniels and Nick Caserio's names have come up. They've got close relationships with Jack Easterby. Easterby was actually going to go to Indianapolis with Josh in 2018. And then Easterby tried to get Nick to come to Houston before the Patriots blocked it in 2019. That relationship's there. I don't know that those two guys would take that shot. They've waited so long just to be in a position where they might be reporting to Jack Easterby. And I'm going to give you the one name that I think is a little obvious, but I'll give you a little nugget of information with that. Everybody's talking about Dabo Swinney, right? And everybody connects Easterby to the Patriots. Dabo Swinney has a very close relationship with Jack Easterby. So I would not be surprised if one of Jack Easterby's first calls during this search is down to Dabo Swinney, who, of course, is Deshaun Watson's college coach, either to try to get him to come there or at least get some advice on how to handle the search. And so that strong relationship there between Dabo Swinney and Jack Easterby, I would not undersell that one.
Wow, that's interesting. Senior NFL reporter, Monday morning quarterback Albert Breer, late notice today. Thanks, buddy, for stopping by.
Thanks, Colin.